Saturday, September 21st, was one of those delicious interludes in the summer. A weekend with good friends at the ranch I had come down the day before, actually from Winnetour, with the Allen Boyds and the George Mahons and the MacPhersons. We slept late, and then I went out to the pool to find Lyndon in with much of the company. Secretary Boyd and Harry were supposed to go in to San Antonio for a press conference, and I was determined to see one more time Hemisphere. I talked to Flavel about it. She was eager, and Helen interested enough to want to go. I called Patsy Steves, who must personally have entertained some several hundred of Hemisphere's 5.5 million guests this summer, but she was not too busy to break away from whatever her duties of the day were and take care of me and mine. So we flew in by Jetstar and arrived at Hemisphere at about 11:30, where Saeed Khan greeted us, Flavel and Helen and I, and Clay MacPherson and her daughter Coco. I'd outlined to everybody on the way what I thought were the greatest things to see, and absolutely insisted that everybody go out on their own to what sounded enticing. As for me, I wanted to go right back to the Texas Pavilion, and it wound up that this is what we all did. With Henderson Shuffler on hand to give his incomparable dialogue as we went through, and Patsy smoothly arranging everything, I had the best view of it and achieved the most understanding that I ever had of the 26 ethnic groups that have made up Texas since man began his stay here. Actually, we only got through about 5, but I picked up such interesting nuggets as that a considerable number of Chinese were imported from the West Coast to build the railroad, which is already being built from the other direction, almost entirely by Irish labor. When the railroad finally met somewhere in the middle of Texas, there was a Donnybrook that not even Marshall Dillon could have contained. And for the first time, I saw outlined the whole story of the building of the capital of Texas. For quite a time, no one noticed me, and then gradually more and more people did, and I soon found myself moving in a crowd from showcase to showcase, and interrupted with twitterings and squeals and God bless yous, and tell the president we'd pray for him, and most often when it was some particularly touching message, it would be from a Negro. This happens over and over. We had only gotten through about 5 ethnic groups when we realized it was 1 o'clock and our men would already be at La Paloma del Rio waiting for us. So with Henderson and Saeed and Patsy, we joined them there, found a table on the riverbank, drank beer and watched the barges go by waving at them, and delighted in telling our visitors the story of the little river. I found from Henderson that indeed the Texas Hall of Cultures will remain the building, and that though ever so many of the artifacts have been borrowed from museums and from private collectors, that many of these will be happy to extend the loans for another year, adding in some cases additional and even better ones have been found and given for a permanent collection. And so it will close for a while, be reorganized, some things returned, and then it will reopen. The basis is still a little uncertain, but I think it will be a permanent part of San Antonio life, of Texas life, and I am enormously proud of the whole concept and execution. We ate a delicious Mexican dinner with abandon, everything. Said goodbye to Patsy, our hostess, and the Mahons and the Boyds and I went back by chopper to the ranch, the MacPherson staying to see more. We all felt ready for a little nap. Lyndon and George had spent a good part of the day around the pool talking, and were a healthy red. Late in the day, the Boyds and Mahons, Mildred and Marie, and Bob Hardesty and Harry Middleton, whom we include in everything possible these days because we want them to learn the Johnson life, and the Harry MacPhersons and Coco, went to the lake to spend the evening. We went first to Coca-Cola Cove, where the boats joined us, and Lyndon took all the brave young ones out in his speedboat, while Helen and some of the quieter members stayed with me in the big boat. First, I had a good long swim, about 45 minutes, and what seemed to be long, long distances, in the cool and rather choppy waters of the lake, and exulted in the feeling of stretching and using my muscles and getting a little tired and lying on my back and looking up into the sky, and generally exulting in the feeling of well-being I have when I do considerable exercise. Then back in the boat and to the beach house, where Lyndon had already taken a car full over to see the progress on the Krim estate. The presidential suite is coming right along. And every time he sees Arthur and Matilda, he teases them about his taking up residence with them there. On the boat going back to the Haywood, we started our bridge game. That is one of the delightful things about this weekend, having two congenial couples that play bridge. And I am very much aware that Lyndon planned it that way in part for me. We have grown more and more congenial and understanding with the George Mahons through the years. He is a remarkable man with an expanding interest in trees in the Smithsonian Institute, the vast ramifications of the Appropriations Committee, in fact, and just about everything that comes his way. I was astounded to find that this weekend is his 68th birthday. He is a young, slim 68. And the Allen Boyds, who are their neighbors and good friends, have been one of the pleasantest additions to our troops here, to our cabinet. I think he is one of the young comers in government if he chooses to remain in. A combination of the solid and pragmatic with the liberal and idealist. In one conversation, he gave me about an hour's summary of transportation problems and exploration, no solutions. Of the short-sighted phenomena of funneling more and more automobiles into cities by enormous and expensive freeways, when the places to park the automobiles once they're in the cities grow scarcer and scarcer, and the problem more frustrating. A synopsis of the story of the rapid transit system in Washington, and how one man in Congress has tied it like a Siamese twin to the freeway. It was a good weekend, a mixture of talk and fun. When it was quite dark, we landed at the Haywood. Lyndon is always reluctant to leave the lake or the pastures when there is still light in the sky. We went inside and started a bridge game while they were frying the fish out on the terrace. Ridiculously enough, everybody had insisted on having fried catfish again, in spite of the fact that's what we'd had last night. My thoughts went to Linda, alone in Washington. This was the Saturday she had asked me to save to spend with her. Inevitably, my life seems to be fragmented, and I am torn between people that I love and that need me. And I promise myself that I will make it up, always, to each one. We ate with reckless forgetfulness of our big lunch, and then choppered home about 10:30, and to bed, all satisfied with a varied and interesting day. I had a rub and to sleep by 11:30.